For February 16th, 2018, we talk about Monster Hunter World, the shuttering of Mayfair Games, and we ask you about your worst grinding stories. Welcome to Level 230. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meissmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We got a length of rope and we pulled Dennis out of the oubliette. welcome back, Dennis.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
Yeah.
Been out traveling the world and doing things and... Unfortunately, not podcasting, so I've got stuff saved up to talk about.
Nice, nice. Do you have anything you want to say about what you were doing while you were gone?
Yeah, I went on a Disney cruise for my and my wife's 30th birthday, / because it was fun for the kids, but mostly for us. Mm-hmm. And it was a great time had by all. So it was a really, really fun time. And everyone was up way past their bedtime, both parents and kids. Yeah. But it was all worth it. Yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, there's no like sun when you're out on the water, so it's hard to tell. It's like being in a casino.
Yeah. Essentially.
Wait. I'm not sure that's how the ocean works.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's a perpetual twilight because the sun is pinned over the earth. It's pinned over America.
Yeah, I've been playing Subnautica. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
As you say, it got a little scary for the kids when the tentacles from the Everdark started taking over the ship, but thankfully we were able to fight it back.
Well, I mean, as long as you have the offering and, you know, say the rhyme, but then you're fine, you know?
Yeah. Which is Mishka Mushka Mickey Mouse, I believe.
Right. You know, it has to be tailored for the situation or else it gets even angrier.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good times. Nice. I didn't spend 4 weeks cruising, though. I don't know if I could have done that. but, you know, I had some work travel in there as well.
Yeah.
But have settled back in for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Which is to say until some other client decides they want a project in 2 weeks. So.
Nice.
I mean, they all want them in 2 weeks. It's a matter of, will they get it in 2 weeks?
Yes.
to which I say, you want it when? it's a little bit of a client services joke there, you know. You know, only people who work with clients will get that, or people who have bosses, people who do anything under a time constraint, people who have anybody else in their life, people whose actions matter.
It sounds like you don't have a target market. It sounds like you're targeting the market, Cole. Right.
Yeah. well, it's so good to have you back, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And David, you weren't around last time.
Yes, I was not. No. Yeah. So I don't know. We had the Flower Festival this past weekend in Chinatown. So that was kind of cool. And it's, as far as I can tell, it's also kind of the de facto like trial run for Chinese New Year, which is, I think, like next week.
Okay, I was going to ask, but if I asked, oh, is the Flower Festival part of Chinese New Year, what that might make it sound like is I just think that Chinese people are always celebrating New Year's.
Well, that's how they get so wise, that they have a new year every day. So,
oh, yeah, I mean, for
like
for
a
us,
thousand years old.
For us, it's 2018, and for them, they're in scientific notation.
Right, exactly.
That's right.
No, yeah, so as far as I actually didn't realize it wasn't the Chinese New Year celebration, because I assumed they'd just kind of shuffled it forward or back to, you know, beyond the weekend.
That's like Easter rules, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was actually pretty cool. They just tons and tons of... different types of like plum blossoms and stuff like that, and dog decorations all over the place.
Wait, dog decorations? Oh, because it's year of the dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
So actually, one of my favorite things is someone was out walking there, where those adorable, like, tan, like, the Japanese dogs are in every YouTube video.
Oh, the
Shiba Inu?
Yeah, Shiba Inu.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it being, like, you're the dog, it's, you know, instantly, like, the de facto, like, mascot. And so, you know, the dog was enjoying, you know, everyone thinking it was the coolest thing ever.
Finally, it was finally being treated with the respect it deserves.
Everybody finally got on the same page, yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything that compares to a flower festival in San Francisco or a Disney cruise. I've mostly been realizing how much I work. That's the thing. Yeah. No, it's been good. Good past week. But I don't have like an anecdote or anything. Ben, how about you?
I played another game of Twilight Imperium this last week, which was fun. It was like a full day thing. We started at like 10 in the morning and we didn't get done till 8:30 at night. But
nice. Good Lord.
We did not finish the game. We were like two or three rounds out probably, and we were just like, we're gonna call it like a draw, because there were a lot of people were close and it was a school night. We had work today, so yeah.
Which one was that?
Twilight Imperium. It's like a space multiplayer board game.
Now,
notorious
tell me
for being...
if I understand, is it true that if you ever finish a game, you actually get sucked into the Twilight Imperium, or is that only with the expansion?
We actually finished the game last month, but we picked more like military based races this time, so there was a lot more battles, and so it took a lot longer this time. Yeah, but it was a lot of fun.
So do you have the proper like continent to keep the game set up while you're not playing it, or
we do have three tables set up, and like there are a lot of snacks that are brought, so it is,
you get a golf cart to get from one side to the other.
It's a decent production. I have very considerate roommates for putting up with that. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, you're hosting it.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yep.
I still want to get another crack at what was that game we played, like Time Detectives or something?
Time Stories.
Time Stories.
Yeah.
I've got another module, so y'all want to get in Cincinnati at the same time at any point, I'm down.
T.I.M. Tim Stories. Hi, Tim.
Tim E. Stories.
don't worry. We've got all the time in the world.
And they still make the same mistake every time.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Bioshock.
Yeah.
There you go.
There's always,
you know, some people keep playing Bioshock 2, and it's like, you made the same mistake.
there's always some dipshits. There's always some dice. Ooh, dipshits and dice would be a very good actual play podcast name.
Watch out, Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah. So we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, start with your story, which is not actually about video games at all.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's true. It's tangentially related. It's about board games, but it's about a big one. Mayfair Games, the game company that made Settlers of Catan, got bought out. So they're kind of shutting down, more or less. They got bought out by, Ems? Let me,
Asmodee? Like Asmodee, Asmodee. Yeah.
Yeah. Asmodee Games, which apparently has bought out a lot of other companies recently, which I didn't know this. They bought out Fantasy Flight, which is actually the game company that makes Twilight Imperium.
Yeah. They also make XCOM.
Ooh. Hmm. Okay. Yeah, they're like known for having like a lot more kind of like a deep like art in a lot of their games, but you know, their game mechanics are good as well, but they're like known for their art. And apparently Asmodee has also done stuff in like Europe where they like sell Magic cards in Europe too, which I didn't know that either. But apparently that's that company's been aggressive with buying more people. So it's kind of a bummer because it kind of marks like an end of an era, since Settlers of Catan is like one of the first really big board games, really popular board games. That's like, you know, the start of like modern board games, I guess, where it's like kind of focusing on the strategy and not on hurting your friendships. So
yeah. Catan was always the one that was one of the first ones that I heard like regular people at work getting together to play. Right.
Mm-hmm. I could never play that. I could never understand why I couldn't simply take the other people's sheep by force. or just and then, you know, once I have them, you pull a Samson and, you know, tie torches to their tails and send them through your enemies, you know, grain fields.
Are there even sheep in Settlers of Catan?
There are sheep
in Settlers. There are sheep, and okay. It's foxes in the Bible story, but I think it would work with sheep too.
Yeah, yeah. We're...
How many bricks does it take to turn in for murder?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So do we know what exactly happened to Mayfair? Like, did they just say, yeah, we're done, and, you know, want to just sell the licensing? Like, this is better than the game going out of print. Like,
yeah, in the note that they wrote, it sounds very much like a letter of resignation or something. It's, after 36 years, this was not an easy decision or one we took lightly, but it was necessary. So I think they're just like, yep, we're done. Yeah. So
I mean, that's better than being like, do you realize how much money we have? We're going to the Bahamas for the rest of our lives.
We are never going to be in Catan again. We are going.
We traded in enough sheep and grain in order to.
Yeah.
But we always knew we could do better, so we didn't want to just settle for Catan.
Oh. It's weird though, because they're still making games. Like, they were at Gen Con last year, putting out new Settler Catan games, and apparently they're releasing a new game called Just Catan. Like, they're dropping everything else.
Build the map, and then you decide that you need to rearrange the tiles again. You build the map, and then decide you need to rearrange.
So
you never actually settle.
Yeah.
I need to get some pictures and like post them to the Slack or something. One of my friends in Cincinnati, her father got really into 3D printing, and so for Christmas he made them a custom Catan board where like each of the tiles is, you know, completely unique and is all three dimensional. So like, the one I remember is one of the plains tiles, like has like a tornado going across it and stuff like that. And it's really badass.
One of my friends here also has 3D printed one, and we got to play it once, but yeah, there were things like a lighthouse in the ocean tiles and stuff like that.
Nice.
But apparently it took them like a month to print out the entire board.
Oh jeez.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, yeah, this this company buying stuff up doesn't seem like it is necessarily the death of any game that it buys.
Because I think it's a little this could be, I don't know. I'm always weird about like single large companies like that controlling things. So this could be like the first EA of video games. But
are you familiar with Disney?
EA of board games, I mean. No. Yeah, that's another thing too.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the Han Solo trailer?
No, I haven't.
I have seen the Han Solo trailer. It looked all right.
Yeah, I don't know. We're getting too far off topic, but
I will say though that, you know, Rogue One is probably my favorite Star Wars movie, so that probably
on having this conversation
invalidates my opinion.
I want this conversation to never happen again. It's like Groundhog Day, but it keeps happening.
I'm sorry, you've used up all your time units. You'll have to try again.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Yeah. That isn't a shot at any one particular person. It's always that conversation's always happening.
What?
I think Ben just needs to stop being such a Star Wars curmudgeon, and then we'll be okay.
Aw.
Don't take that from him.
I'll take it. I'll admit that I'm down on that Star Wars series.
I've got a story, and this is just a short one. This is just a patented Cole, a thing happened story. And the thing that happened is that Vampire has a release date.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey.
What? Like you mean the time in which the sky is darkened and the vampires, you know, once again take over the Earth?
Yes. When the children of the night ride once more on the dark winds of perfidy. Vampire, V-A-M-P-Y-R, the
NPR.
Vampire, the game by Don't Nod, the people who did Life is Strange, but also Remember Me, the one that's like a action role playing game, but like it's like Victorian. It's one of the games I'm looking forward to most this year. Honestly, it's going to be pretty good. It's like set in 1918 London. It's been delayed a little bit. I didn't expect it to come out this early in the year, honestly. So guess what? June 5th, I'm picking that up.
Mm-hmm. This is set in 1918. And wasn't that when the shooter that was on PS4 was set?
No, I think you're thinking of 1866 or something like that.
Yeah, something like
one of them's the Hitler number. No, I feel like it's like 1886, the order or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Say it feels like ish the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's another game that's like in the Dishonored vent crawler immersive sim style, except you get to decide what kind of vampire you want to be. And I like this team a lot. So yeah.
I like how on the nose it is that the core highlighted letter in the name is Y.
Why? And then it's a vampire robot. It's a different thing. Yeah. Yep.
Which class or whatever they call them, did you go with in Vampire the Masquerade, the adventure game thing?
The first person shooter one, that is the Troika game from 2003, I think. That was I ended up doing Toreador, but the real money is in the clan that is insane. I forget the name of that clan off the top of my head.
I forget the names, but I generally can remember like their thing. Mm-hmm. I went with like the pseudo werewolf ones.
Right. Yeah, the beastish ones. Yeah. No, I hope this, you know, captures some of that. Yeah, gets a little something of that in there. Yeah. Dennis, what's going on with the Shadow of the Colossus remake?
Yeah, it just keeps on giving. So they recently discovered a new secret. Apparently there was a new collectible in the game that people were trying to pick up. At first, it was just realizing that these new collectibles were there. Then it was figuring out how many of them there were, and then it was finding all of them. And
you
once
have to journey down
into
Uncanny Valley to find it.
Yeah, that face.
You got to play in a very specific game mode. But yeah, once you collect all these things and go down into the cave under the starting area, you find a new sword, which is the Sword of Dorman, which is the kind of god figure in the game.
It's the voice that's talking to you and sending you on your quest.
The voice / voices, yeah. And it basically gives you higher attack, but also lower health.
Right.
So I'm curious as to the implications of this sword for speedrunners.
Hmm.
I imagine that kind of buff is exactly the kind of thing that someone who's trying to get through the game quickly would look for. And I don't remember if you can do like a new game plus version of Shadow of the Colossus, keeping all of your buffs and weapons and everything.
You can totally, in like the main version, you can totally start up with all your relics and stuff. You don't necessarily have to. Those are persistent across saves. I wonder, like, because those relics that you get, the parachute and things like that, all of those blow open the loop of the game anyway. So I wonder if a sword that does a little bit of extra damage would necessarily make that big of a difference compared to those.
I would think it would depend on whether it allowed you to, I know a lot of the bosses you'd have to do like whatever the trick is, a certain number of times. And so I imagine it would all come down to whether or not it was enough to, cut off one of those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So yeah. Cool though that they're still leaving little treats in the game as they continue to update it.
Yeah. I wish I could justify the purchase for this, but my PS3 is still plugged in and I have the HD collection on that.
Yeah. There's so many ways to play this game. I was going to say this is a little tidbit that will help tide us over until The Last Guardian comes out, but that one actually came out and everyone promptly forgot about it. So yeah,
it's on my,
back to Shadow of the Colossus.
It's on my shelf.
Yeah. So yeah, a fun little treat if you have bought this game for the 16th time.
Yeah. Neat. And finally, David, what is this Waypoint story that you brought us?
Yeah, so kind of an interesting story. You know, it's sort of kind of more of just kind of a, I don't know, anecdote, you know, type article. But basically, the author was in Thailand and saw a poster listing, you know, various vices and what the artist felt it would lead to in reincarnation. And one of the results was a zombie, and that was linked to video games. Presumably not literally. I don't think it's canon that you can reincarnate as a zombie, but I could be wrong.
It seems like there would be more zombies if that was the case.
Yeah, true. But the you know, then goes on to, you know, discuss some of the some of the intersection of video games and Buddhism. For example, I didn't realize apparently the Buddhist leader who's kind of the who's the only one who's currently recognized by, I think it's like Tibet, India, and China, mm-hmm. is big into first person shooters and views them as a way to deal with his feelings of aggression. And then he interviews several monks and is kind of discussing the their feelings on how it's affecting the training, because apparently in Thailand apparently the Buddhist temples often serve as the schools, right. So like kids will go and kind of temporarily be monks, things like that, and obviously kids like video games. And so they kind of discuss the idea that they could potentially be a distraction, and that under Buddhism it would be okay to play a game, but you shouldn't have a attachment to winning or losing.
Mm-hmm.
Although they do seem to feel that it's a good way to reach out to non-Buddhists or to lay people. So that's kind of cool. Huh. The other thing they discuss is the idea of whether your actions in a game can cause
if it is like a step away from the virtues, or if it is not right thinking or right acts. Yeah.
Yeah, if it affects your karma, I guess would be. And it seems like they kind of argue that it depends on your intent.
Wait, so it depends on your intent. I would also say maybe if it makes another person's day worse. So like messing around and making a bad choice in a Mass Effect game would be more neutral than this is probably griefing blasphemous. Yeah. I was gonna say if you're teabagging people in a multiplayer shooter, I'm not exactly sure how offensive what I'm saying is, but do you know what I mean? Is it you enacting a fiction, or is it you actually making somebody else's day worse?
It's interesting though. It's got a very video gamey system to it. They say, you know, deviating from the five precepts will cause you to lose 20% of your soul.
Huh.
That feels like I would read that out of a game manual.
Yeah.
Wait.
Is that an actual
Does it
quote
actually
from a thing?
Say that?
Yes. Let's see here. Just above the picture of the temple with the steps with the flags.
Yeah. So a quote from the article here. Buddhists follow the five precepts in order to abstain from harming living things, stealing, sexual misconduct, intoxication and lying every time someone violates the five precepts. Sutra Chai explains he loses 20% of his soul, becoming less human and more animal-like. Huh, animals have no wisdom or mindfulness. What I would be interested in is like a comparison between this, and it would take somebody more scholarly than I and somebody with more knowledge of this culture than I. It would be interesting to compare this response to games as a potential distraction or as a potential moral peril to things like when novels reach these cultures or when television or movies.
Oh, sure.
Just kind of a comparative look at media and its effects on things, or the modernization of different religions in these, in these regions. Right.
Yeah.
I'm also curious to know how prevalent this is within the religion. Cause I know like when I was a kid, I went to a church camp and it was like a Christian one, and they like had a talk on this too, where it's like somebody saying that they spent too much time playing Halo and like that was distracting them from religion, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's probably a pretty, pretty common concern. I suppose it's maybe a little more, relevant to this just because, like, as a monk, you know, you're supposed to be doing, that's, I guess, your job. You know what I mean.
You're supposed to be making beer in your tapestry.
Yeah. Exactly.
As a practitioner, you know, mindfulness is a bigger part of it than I don't know.
It would be like going to confession and your priest is on a 3DS.
another question would be like, if you look at Catholic monks, you know, like not the Jesuits, because anything goes with them, but how do they address this as well? Basically, anybody in like a monastic, my entire life is religion, but I'm still a human and I still participate in the culture somewhat. You know.
Yeah, no, that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
I know they do mention the article that monks apparently aren't supposed to play sports.
Hmm.
Because of like the idea of winning or losing. Although I mean,
are you going to make a reference to Shaolin soccer?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I was going to make a reference to Shaolin in general, though, in that like clearly not all branches of Buddhism see that exactly the same way.
Right. Yeah. I'll make sure to put a link to this in the notes, because I also want to remember to read it later.
Yeah.
I love the quote. They're talking about karmic consequences, and the person Sudha Chai says, "You steal cars in the game, then steal a real car. America and Thailand are worlds apart, yet somehow it's comforting to know that even here, GTA is the go-to symbol of moral concern."
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what's the question that you ask the nice people?
It's so nice to be asking questions again. Feels good. So I asked about...
You actually took a four-week fast from asking questions. It really made life difficult.
It's like the Jim Carrey movie Yes Man, only with asking questions.
He seems so inconsiderate. He never asked how we were doing.
Get in the van. Okay. So it's all about kind of, you know, falling prey to Skinner boxes, as we are wont to do every once in a while. What's the dumbest thing you've done to keep grinding out XP, gems, or any other MacGuffin in a game, free to play or otherwise?
Because he said Skinner. Skinner! unforgettable luncheon. Gonna get us started here with Michael, who says, I once spent about 4 hours farming a Borderlands 2 optional boss. By the end, I had optimized my route to involve sprinting into a live geyser, which would propel me into the air. While flying, I'd chuck a grenade down at the perfect angle to get around his shield, then land the finishing shotgun blast. All told, a run took about 120 seconds. Shame the loading screens were about half of that. When I finally got my prized infinity pistol, I used it for about 5 minutes and thought, it's all right. Then never used it again.
Oh, no.
Womp womp.
4 hours. 4 hours in 2 minute increments.
Oh. There's a joke there that I'll just let pass by.
It's not us. It's not the days you've played. It's the hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Does that match your guys' experience in Borderlands? Like, everything in Borderlands seems so impermanent, or seems so weirdly fiddly,
casino-y.
Yeah, like I can't fathom there being a thing in a place, and I know I'm going to get it, and I'm going to go there and get it.
I do kind of like the impermanence of the weapons. Like, it's like, well, if these set of weapons suck, well, I'll just keep playing the game, and then I'll get, you know, two levels higher that are better guns. So
yeah.
I always wished I wanted them to make a character that was just entirely built around, what is it, if you hold down the pickup button, you'll actually like toss the gun you currently have and pick up the front one. So I always thought it would be awesome for them to make a class that was based around the fact that like none of your weapons are permanent.
Just do a no reloads run. Yeah. That'd be badass. I bet you could like do something like that.
The longer you hold it, the worse it gets.
Yeah. that's a really good idea. Like, no, I am really intrigued by that now. Anyway, yeah. not going down that tangent, save that one for later. I think that Borderlands sorely needed an upgrade system, kind of like what Destiny has, where if you really want, you can boost the stats of a gun. To keep it around, because sometimes you find like just, and it's fun because it's random, just this crazy combination of attributes that makes a gun insane. Like the bullets shoot in spirals and they're all mini dogs that run and chase down enemies after they hit a wall. It just, you get something so crazy, but just because of where you're at in the leveling process, you get 15 minutes where it's actually a viable weapon. And then you kind of have to toss it to the side if you want to keep on progressing. So I would have loved to see something to help you keep good weapons with you.
Yeah, I think my main thing I still remember from Borderlands is my favorite part of it is the crouch tutorial.
What's the crouch tutorial?
So basically at the beginning of the first Borderlands game, it shows you how you can crouch and use that to like crawl under like low obstacles, and then there are no low obstacles in the rest of the game. That's literally the only point in the game where you have to use that.
Yeah, it would have been more work to cut that part out than to if we don't go faster than this, we're not going to get through any of these.
One down.
Ben,
it's like the new weapon loot system that we've developed here.
Ben, what does Sam say?
Our jokes get weaker the more comments that we get. Sam says, my first time through Dark Souls, I got stuck getting in the depths, so I decided to grind. I ground through the slimes in the hallway by the bonfire in one window while watching Netflix in the other. I spent more time grinding in other games, but the fact that I did this while watching the movie The Master of Disguise definitely makes it the dumbest.
Hey, Ben, I forget if this was last episode or the one before it. This is
talk about the turtle.
This is two different Master of Disguise references in less than a month.
I don't want to pay attention to this. I don't want this to become a thing. So I say we should move along really quickly.
I'm not gonna lie, guys. Every once in a while, I just kind of think turtle, and then I'm done, and I don't think about it after a year. But it's in there.
Well, it just comes up because sometimes somebody talks about a turtle, and it's impossible not to, you know.
I think about treasures. And I can't help myself.
Yeah, it's impossible not to ride those winds, you know. I'm gonna go there. Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I definitely the slimes like that is the optimal grinding. I don't know, the quintessential grinding spot, at least for me, of Dark Souls.
Yeah. Well, if you're a pyro, definitely that's a super easy way to go. And those things drop they drop upgrade materials too. And there's been I spent a lot of time in the original Dark Souls just killing a shitload of rats in the depths to get humanity.
You do both of them on one run and get your humanity.
Yeah.
Do they ever explain why rats have humanity?
People have cockamamie theories about them, like being morphed from humans or whatever, or being were-rats. I think that they're just going up and gnawing on the bodies and taking it with them.
Dude, we just got finished talking about Buddhism. Is it that hard?
David, what does Ali say?
Devil May Cry. They rank your playthrough a level at the end. Oh, Capcom, why? Don't you know I will go back and try over and over again until I'm all S? All the time.
If you can get to all S, I'm impressed. I could never do that. And I played the hell out of that game.
Yeah, well, you're a game platinumer.
Yes, well, at least for this kind, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, being a fan of JRPGs, I'm well used to grinding to advance in the game. I do all kind of silly mind tricks to help me keep me amused as I did so, such as, if I encounter this enemy, I'll use the bathroom after the fight.
Oh, God.
Or, when I go up a level, I'll get a snack. Oftentimes, I'd also multitask to help with the boring grind, such as watch TV or a movie, talk to someone on the phone, listen to music, read a book. That's impressive. Or study. That's even more impressive. Study is even more impressive. Or even play another game. Never mind. That's the most impressive. One hand at the console controller and the other hand on the PC keyboard, for example. Are you some kind of god?
Wow. No, it's JRPGs. You barely have to do anything with them.
That's true. So I came close on the cruise. I re-downloaded Final Fantasy VI.
Oh, yeah.
To my Vita, because it's cross-buy. And I was like, maybe I'll take another crack at it. And the thought that came across my mind was, I wonder how far in the game I could get only by using a basic attack. Like, not doing anything else, just basic attacking. And, well, no, I got me to not try the game, because I'm like, yeah. I bet it's embarrassingly far, and that's probably nothing I could do.
Well, especially with six, right? Like, you know, your character's individual abilities don't really differentiate them that much, you know, like they do in the beginning, but then ultimately you get to the, yeah, no.
Well, that's so, what I'm thinking, is like if the difficulty curve is low enough in the beginning, you get over that, and then you just auto-attacking away.
Yeah, you could probably go pretty far. I think 4 and 6 are especially egregious about that.
All right, the internet, let's answer this question. I expect results next week.
let's try.
I'm calling my next brief.
Yeah. Stewart writes, the Korok seeds in Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I even missed one and had to go over a map of all 900 to find it.
Oh, God.
No. Good God. Nope.
No.
Nope. I hate that. I hate it so much. I beat Breath of the Wild this past Sunday, a couple days ago.
Spoiler alert.
What?
What?
For the rest of the show.
I was just gonna say there's one quest, a main quest, where you have 12 photographs that you need to go find where they were taken, and I did, you know, I did a handful of them, and I thought, like, yeah, this is pretty fun, but I kind of want to get through to the end of this. So I printed out a map and I circled locations of them, and then I realized, oh, I didn't mark down where these previous ones are. I almost considered not doing the quest because maybe I would end up searching for something that I had already found, and I would just be going in circles. Like, I could not imagine those core people. Everybody jokes because we're covering Breath of the Wild on Watch Out for Fireballs. And I'm like, oh, are you doing all the Korok seeds? Like, fuck no. Oh, wow. So good on you, Stuart. Let's see, Ben, what does James say?
James says, my life is a strange cycle of playing old RuneScape, like my life depends on it, and then going cold turkey for a few months. It's a problem. When they release it on mobile, I might not survive.
Whoa, RuneScape is still going?
RuneScape, it's still going, and it's getting a mobile release, yeah.
Oh, they actually did recently, like, a complete overhaul. Although I don't think I can ever go back to it, because they actually made it not be perpetually night anymore. And that's just not RuneScape for me.
Yeah.
But no, that is actually probably the game I most often, like, wish I could go back to.
RuneScape was part of that rogues gallery of free MMO alternatives, right? Like back, right. Like specifically like back in high school.
Yeah, I just knew I could get it to it in our computer lab. So
okay, yeah. No, I did Tibia until I could convince my parents to pay for EQ. Yeah. David, what does David say?
David says, using an Android emulator and making/finding click macros to do boring free to play game grinding for me.
Oh wow!
Rob and him then discuss that apparently specifically the game is Brave Exvius.
I have no idea.
You've never heard of it, but I'll buy it.
Yeah.
I'll buy that you did that. I won't buy that.
Right, right. Well, that, I mean, that sounds less like grinding, and that sounds more like you putting, you know, your development.
Sounds like winning.
I mean, yeah, but like that, that is you developing something to solve a problem for fun.
It's a science fair project.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Final Fantasy game.
Huh. Weird. I have no idea. Dennis, what does Juan say?
Juan says, when I first discovered Minecraft, I was on the hunt for some sweet, sweet diamonds. Around this time, they added Spotify on PS4. Found a semi-proven mining method, 3 hours and 4 Wakerthans. Am I reading that right?
Yeah. Wakerthans?
Wakerthans. There we go. And 4 The Wakerthans albums later, I arose victorious. And if I haven't, if you haven't explained by now, oh, what's a Skinner box? It's like meant to elicit a response from you, even if the reward for the response has gone away.
Yeah, it's a term that people use specifically for like loot box kind of stuff. Yeah, slot machine, but we'll also trigger it, or like a Diablo like loot cycle kind of game where, you know, even if you didn't, I'm butchering this, but even if you didn't get something worthwhile, you still get that rush of like, ooh, there was a light and a sound and I got a thing.
Mm-hmm. It speaks to my assumption that if I discover a term, I assume I'm so far behind that everyone else already knows it. So
yeah. Scanner.
Yeah.
Rob.
I always think of the X-Files when I hear it and not the Simpsons.
Well,
we're in the same ballpark.
Your brain hasn't been steamed like mine has. Rob,
like
right?
Steamed
hands? Oh yes. Right,
I was gonna let that go, Ben. You should have let that go.
That's an Albany expression. Rob writes, I was trying to 100% complete Assassin's Creed, which involves getting all the flags in each zone. Using a guide, I tediously went through each and every zone, saving the largest zone for last. In the final and largest zone, I got 99 out of 100 flags. I could not find the last one. Went back through the guide again, marking off each spot as I went. Still 99. So I counted each dot of the map and counted 99. All of that time, the guide had an error where it only showed 99 out of 100.
Oh, my God.
That profile is still one flag away from platinum. Fuck that so much. I hate it.
Oh, man.
I hate it.
Oh, yes. I'm stressed for you.
So is it bad? Like, I feel like I need to confess I've never platinumed a game.
No, that's fine. I haven't.
That's
good.
That's healthy.
I don't think I have either. Like, there are Steam games that I've gotten all of the achievements for. In fact, I'm looking at my page for Soma right now, but that's because you get every achievement by completing the story.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't think you should feel bad at all about that. I don't think somebody who works to buy them stuff should feel bad, but like, don't. I don't think it's anything to feel either upset or proud of. So basically, I don't want anybody to feel anything.
that's and we're back to the Buddhism. The real the real challenge is attachment.
Yeah, free yourself from one.
And we're back to turning 30.
Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, Elder Scrolls Online, I need my mansions and they cost a lot. That means I'm spending a lot of time farming and check guild stores to see if someone made a pricing mistake that I can resell. Wow, it's like the Wall Street. I'm trying to reduce my time to less than an hour a day as a countermeasure.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Freaking day traders.
I have to imagine that most MMOs have the ability to like set a timer for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays,
or at least have a plugin that does it for you.
Yeah, yeah. Seems like it'd be a valuable thing. Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like it would not be in their best interest.
Everyone's as nice as the Wii that says, hey, think about going outside, maybe.
Yeah. Or Netflix. we're sending somebody to check on you. Which actually happened when I've been binge watched The Good Place.
Oh, no.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
No. Somebody didn't send help for me, but I got the box that asked me, "Are you still watching?" Which usually only happens when I fall asleep mm-hmm. when I'm watching something.
Right.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, and it didn't have real world consequences. Except I watched a very fun and good show. Yeah, David, what does Adam say?
Adam says, playing Pokemon Go in small towns makes it hard to get enough people to do the big raids. So once we drove to Toronto to spend the day playing, we lucked out and were there the same weekend as the Toronto Film Festival. Mm. So got to see some cool stuff there, and I got to try a VR demo. And we did get a couple of raids in, too. I caught a legendary. Made for a long day, though, with 3+ hours of driving.
That's not like grinding or doing something weird for a game. That's going on a day trip and playing a game while you're there. Like, it doesn't matter why you did it. It's just that you did a good and normal thing.
But Adam, you know what your motivations were. You'll never be able to escape that.
It doesn't matter. You still did a good and normal thing. I don't say
you,
normal.
You are going to reincarnate as a Pokemon trainer.
Yeah, I don't say normal like lightly. I rarely ever use that word, but like, no, you just took a day trip to a nearby city and did something, which is a thing people do. Yeah. Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I once watched an entire season of The Simpsons in a day while grinding Silver Knights in Dark Souls 3 at the Anor Londo bonfire.
Yeah.
What did
Silver Two great Knights... tastes that taste great together.
What did Silver Knights drop, or what was...
I think maybe he was grinding for a faction item. I forget what Silver Knights drop in Dark Souls 3. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 23 episodes at 22 per minute. That's 506 minutes divided by 60. Yeah, that's eight hours. Just shy of 9 hours of grinding for that. Yeah. Well, you know.
Woo.
I mean,
I hope you got what you were grinding for. He didn't say whether he did or not.
Yeah, cool. Have you ever gotten that? Rapier or side sword?
I did. Yeah, I got the Balder side sword as a drop, just kind of on accident when I was doing the final playthrough for Bonfireside Chat for the revisit season for the victory lap.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm very happy that I never ground for it.
No, sorry. I was just going to troll you. I will not for once.
Let's do one more go round. Just cause Nathan writes, the year Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver came out, my friend and I spent 7 hours playing Pokemon on a perfectly serviceable spring afternoon. 6 of my 7 hours was grinding for a Magnemite, a 20% encounter rate, that was holding a metal coat, 5% hold rate, so that I could evolve my Scyther into a Scizor early in the game. That's a good plan, my friend. Scizor is a good Pokemon. gotta get a Scizor and a Sudowoodo. Yeah.
Gotta get a Force Swipe, right?
I forget. I just know that Scizor is a good Pokemon.
Yeah, that's the one he has an attack that will always leave the enemy with at least one HP, so it makes it really easy to capture Pokemon.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
He continues.
Why?
My why do you know that?
Yeah, why do I know that?
He continues, my bud's girlfriend came over and we watched LA Inc. the entire time. And now I can't stop associating Magnemite with Kat Von D.
My friend, you need to get a Magnemite tattoo.
Yeah.
Fucking Magnemites, how do they work?
Magnemite, like, I like a Magnemite. I think that it's a good design for a Pokemon. Just because it is a bunch of shapes. Yeah. Ben, what does Eric say?
Eric says, you guys remember leaving the GameCube on overnight for the melee character unlocks?
Do you, Ben?
Nope. I remember playing characters? That game a whole bunch and like watching your table get bigger and bigger of your trophy collection.
See, the one I remember is, and maybe this was the alternate way to do it, is you could, it's like, you'd unlock a character every 50 games or something. And so we'd just like set it to one stock and just power through as quick as we could.
Yeah. Huh. So like getting Falco successfully complete the 100 man melee or just play 300 versus mode matches. Yeah. It looks like there are a bunch of those that are just like that have to, that have two equally onerous seeming, requirements. Yeah. That was you, Ben, right?
Yep.
David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I very seldomly grind anything unless it's in a Final Fantasy setting. But I'm new to those games, so it doesn't bother me so much. Games like Dark Souls, I make it my goal not to grind often and just speedrun it away.
Hmm. Yeah. That's a good way to go.
I know. I feel like grinding was one of my favorite parts of Dark Souls. I may have a problem.
Seeing new stuff is one of my favorite parts of Dark Souls.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. And finally, Dennis, what does Franz say?
This is incredible. So Dark Souls 2, when I learned enemies would stop respawning after a while, I immediately realized there's a finite amount of souls in the game. Scared to run out of resources, I proceeded to systematically clear out all of Drain Lake one encounter at a time. Rest at a bonfire, fight the first enemy I encounter, return to bonfire, repeat. It takes like 20 respawns to get someone, right? Or is it closer to 10? Like, that's still a lot of damn respawns. This ensured none of the precious souls would be lost, but it also meant my one and only playthrough took 173 hours. Holy crap. Leaving Drain Lake a wasteland behind him.
Yeah. I believe that Franz wrote in about this experience for Bonfireside Chat. This sounds very familiar to me. And Dark Souls 2 was a little bit fucked in that way because of the way they handled PvP matching via soul memory. They eventually gave you a way to manipulate it, and they changed some of the requirements. But every enemy that you killed would raise your soul memory, which made it which put you into different classes for matchmaking, whether or not you spent those souls. So if you made a habit of killing enemies, dying, and then losing the souls, you would put yourself at a disadvantage if you ended up getting invaded. However, nobody really invaded anybody in vanilla Dark Souls 2, so it ended up being a little bit for naught. Yeah. Cool. Let's do ours. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Man, this is tough because I really do try to avoid grinding. And there probably definitely been times where it's like, oh, I want to equip this weapon in Dark Souls, so I'm just going to grind whatever I need to get that stat up or whatever. But like, there have been times where I've done dumb things, like in Final Fantasy XII, going into the a high level dungeon, the Necker Hall of Nabudis or something, to get a high level item from a merchant, stuff like that. Yeah. I really don't have a story for this, so I shouldn't have started talking. So,
that'll show you.
That'll show all of you. That'll teach you guys to trust me with microphones. Ben, how about you?
I got a couple answers. I think Grand Theft Auto is the one that I spent the most time grinding, and that was fine. But I think it's a product of, like, if the game shows you your progress or shows you like stats or whatever, that kind of compels you to try and find more stuff or like complete them. We used to, like, a year or two ago when Pokemon Go first came out, we would do work lunches where we'd go to certain places because they had Pokestops. That seems a little dumb in hindsight. And the other one I can think of is I played Half-Life 2 Episode 2 and did the gnome achievement where you carry the gnome through the entire game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That just sounds weird. Like fun.
Yeah. It's like a challenge play or a stunt play, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. David, how about you?
I feel like it would have to be Warframe. Like, I've just killed so many people in that game. And I don't know, like the entire thing is set up around grinding. So yeah, I think that'd be mine. I don't know have any specific like stories about it. But that would definitely be it for me.
And Dennis?
Yeah, so I've got two. The requisite Dark Souls one was I convinced myself for a time that I wanted to do a Dark Souls 2 run where the only attack I would use was consumable items.
Oh, yeah. How far did you get with that?
So I beat the Fallen Giant, first boss, whatever that guy was. And then I beat the guy that you could use the speedrun trick where you tricked him into diving off of the... off of the ledge. That's the first Dragon Rider, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the next boss after that? I'm trying to remember.
No, that'd be the Flexile Sentry. Yeah.
Yeah. So I stalled out there.
Okay.
But it would lead to me doing a couple things. The first thing I would do is just run out and spend God knows how long baiting enemies off of ledges. hoping for free souls.
I mean, that doesn't break the letter. Okay, I was about to say, that breaks both the letter and the spirit.
How so?
Well, you said I'm only going to kill enemies with...
I said not the attack I was going to use.
Okay.
Well, he said he wouldn't kill them. He didn't say they wouldn't kill themselves.
Okay.
It's the saw defense.
Right.
Then, and the other thing I did would be summon someone in and just follow them around collecting the souls that they generated. And I actually, that was part of how I beat the first boss, the Lost Giant or Fallen Giant or whoever, was like, you know, summon the guy in and run in and just... You know, I threw daggers at him, but it became very clear very quick that I was not going to contribute in a meaningful way to that fight. And he was a good sport about it, so that saw me through. but yeah, so that's Dark Souls, or Dark Souls 2 specifically. The other thing I did was when I was an intern, I got one of those, like, it was like a zombie map game, very similar to Pokemon Go, where you had to go and, you know, check in at different streets to get caches of stuff. And I would go out just, you know, a couple times a day because I could get close enough to a street near the office to get some extra stuff. And it was past the smoking exit. So I'm sure my boss was like convinced that I was a smoker, but never ever actually saw me smoke.
You're just, you were acting like a smoker.
Yeah. Or I'd find a reason to like go down to my car in the parking lot because that would take me past it. And,
yeah,
that was dumb. Especially when you're like trying to get a job.
Yeah. Oh well.
But yeah, that's mine. still got the job, so it can't have been too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks everybody for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that. If you want to participate in these in the future, look for them to go up on Monday afternoons at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you have some splaining to do. What you've been playing?
Yeah, dude, my period of time is really in that or so category. I got a lot. I'll try to go through quickly, but I got some stuff I'm really excited about.
You don't have to use them all up today either.
No. Believe me, I won't. So the first one I want to talk about, though, is kind of a video game / board game hybrid. I seem to just be magnetically attracted to board games that run with an app, and found a game called Drop Mix. Does that sound familiar to anyone?
Oh, shit. Drop Mix? I was looking to get this around Christmas time. I heard them talk about it on a podcast. This is it's a Harmonix joint.
It's a Harmonix joint. It's effectively like a card game. There's a board with five spaces to play cards. The trick is that each card is a sample of music from a song. And literally, as you set the card on the board, I don't know if it's like RFID or something, but the card,
Black Magic.
The board can, Black Magic, the board can sense which card is on top. Even if you have a pile of cards, it can sense which card is on top. And will incorporate that loop or that piece of music into the mix. And so it's essentially you playing DJ as you play the game, building a mix of music.
Notably, whatever two cards you put together, it's doing some crazy stuff on the back end with whatever part you bring in. Like you're bringing in this is the bass line or the guitar part or the vocal line. It is messing with it and changing the key and the tempo in order to make it so it all fits together. There's no guarantee it's going to sound good, but it's not going to be a train wreck nightmare.
Yes. So it's pitch adjust it, tempo adjust it. And it's not just playing two static tracks on top of each other either. Like I've noticed that the mix kind of passes back and forth and each track gets its day in the sun. So there will be very clear like, we're going to the bridge and the bass is really going to kick in. And it's just whatever the bass happens to be on the board at that moment is going to come to the forefront. Or like, this isn't just one snippet of singing looped over and over again. It's actually kind of mixed in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
So that not only is there mixing in terms of tempo and pitch, but there's also like, I don't know what to call it, prominence, or just, you know, you know, it's not one 15 second loop that repeats. It's actually like, it feels like a mix that you would hear at a party.
Yeah. It's there are like phrase changes.
Yeah. There you go. That's exactly how to think about it. Which is just an incredible piece of technology in and of itself, but then the game behind it is really fun as well. So the kind of game piece of it is that the board, you know, of the five spots, each one will only take one or two colors of card. And there's a color for beat, there's a color for vocals, there's a color for like melody and rhythm. Mm-hmm. And you can mix and match different units or different pieces of that, but there's only so many spots on the board for each. In addition, each card has a volume. And once you play a card of one volume level, you can only play higher volume cards on top of it. Which is really interesting.
Find one that goes up to 11.
Yes. It goes up to 3, unfortunately. Eventually, maybe with expansion packs, it'll go to 11. So that it's, you know, a really interesting kind of light strategy game. If you're playing against someone else, you're trying to kind of get the most points by either flipping pieces of the mix over to your side or by kind of playing special cards that allow you to do different things. There are then also kind of wild cards, which have pieces of every mix and will actually significantly change the what's playing by kind of changing the tempo and changing the pitch midstream. So each of those has kind of a transition piece built into it, and that'll play, and then it's a completely different song using all the same parts, which is really cool to hear.
That's kind of crazy.
I think that I missed. How does it score? How is it scored? Is it subjective or is it?
So there's two different modes apart from just like freestyle, which lets you do whatever the hell you want. Competitive, you get points for having, you're sitting on one side, other people are sitting to the other, and you take ordered turns. And so the game knows which team is playing when a card is played. Mm-hmm. And when you play on a spot for the first time, you get a certain number of points. If you play over someone else's card, you get a certain number of points. And if you get all five slots switched to your team, you get a certain number of points.
Okay.
In addition, at any time, rather than play a card yourself, you can hit the drop mix button, which forces your opponent to clear off all cards of a certain volume.
Okay.
And the percent chance, it like spins a spinner in the app. And the percent chance that it hits a 3 is much higher than hitting a 2 is higher than hitting a 1. Mm. So there's kind of this built in, you know, the higher volume cards you play, the more vulnerable you are to getting pulled off.
Mm. And higher volume scores more, I'm assuming.
The volume cards, I don't think had additional points, on top of them that you could just play them over more stuff. It's interesting. I actually haven't done competitive mode. I have done party mode, which you could play with someone else. And the game will just make requests. So it'll say like, I need a red card. I need a blue card. I need drums specifically. I need something at a 1 volume. Or sometimes it'll give you multiple of those requests at the same time. And you have a hand of cards, your partner or partners have a hand of cards. And you're trying to meet those requests as quickly as possible. The thing is, though, if you play a higher volume card or kind of make a stupid choice on where to put it, you can lock yourself out of being able to meet future requests. Mm. So it's a balance of I want to address the request quickly versus I want to address it in a strategic way.
Right.
Because the faster you meet the request, the more points you get. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of this real quick, like, do you have one? I have one. Okay, I'm playing the one. Okay, you got a 2? I got a 2. Okay, I'm going to play you. I don't have any yellow. I need a yellow. Okay, you got a yellow. And like you go back and forth. So. That's a lot of fun. And throughout all of this, like the game is fun, even if you didn't have music. Throughout all of this, there's just this really cool dynamic mix playing in the background.
Yeah.
It is incredible. Like I absolutely love it.
Yeah. I was real tempted by this almost explicitly as just a musical toy. I have no interest in the game side of it. I just want to sit down and like to say like, oh, like what does this part of Earth, Wind and Fire September sound like with this? Yes. With the beat from this Childish Gambino song, like that would literally just be like me fucking around with it.
So that is how I have played with it the majority of the time, or more specifically, that's how Luke and Milo have played with it. The majority of the time. And that has been the most fun is literally I'll sit down with them. They get all excited. I plug it into my amplifier. So I've got this like, you know, turn the playroom into a dance hall and I'll deal each of them 5 cards and we go into free play. And all they know how to do now is take turns. So, okay, you got to wait. Milo took a turn. Okay, now you take a turn. Now you take a turn. And I'll ask Luke, I'll be like, do you have any red cards? And, you know, you can put those down. And they absolutely love it. And we'll, like, we'll build a mix together. And then once they run out of cards, we'll all just run into the room and dance for a while. And then eventually we'll clear off the card and we'll build a new mix and then run into the room and dance for a while. Like, it is the most fun.
Do they have, like, do you have a sense of how successful this is? Because, like, the way they expand it, it seems really interesting to me that you would just buy, like, literal packs of cards to shuffle into your stuff.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because mechanically, unless there's, like, new special abilities in those packs, there's no mechanical reason to buy more cards. You have 60 cards in your deck. The most you're ever going to play with, even at, like, five players is 60 cards.
Right.
I think that's correct. Maybe I'm wrong. But so there's no reason to expand other than just you want to hear cool shit. I'm very tempted to buy more.
Yeah.
So you get a pop playlist, a rock playlist, a hip hop playlist, and an electronica playlist to start. And it's all fixed cards. So it's not like a shitty trading card game or collectible card game where it's randomized and you're like trying to get a rare. You know what you're going to get in a pack when you buy it.
So it's not a Skinner box.
That's right. But yeah, so I would happily go out, and I think it's $15 a pack or something. The cards are not cheap. But I would love to add more. I don't know how successful it's been.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, I mean, Harmonix kind of seems like they just are perpetually on the edge of not being a company anymore.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to this just seems so inventive, you know. Like, it'd be nice to see them get
yeah, it was on a big sale on Amazon.com. That's how I found it.
It's like $70 or something like that. Yeah.
So 30% off. And I'm trying to remember if it was like a top recommended item or something like that. Like, it was getting signal boosted on Amazon. I think that will hopefully make them all right.
Yeah. Cool. What else? Well,
that'll teach him to be creative.
Yeah. Gosh, what else? Again, a pseudo game. I promise I've been playing video games. I've been watching the hell out of the Overwatch League, which is like
I've caught a couple of those.
Yeah. So I think Jala brought it up on the show a couple weeks ago, and I was so excited and so disappointed I couldn't be there. But man, like, I suddenly get what everyone is excited about when they're watching the Super Bowl or any of the other kind of sports that I never really followed super closely. There's something about being in on the ground floor of this. And I know there's been competitive Overwatch before this, but kind of this official stamp of approval on a league is fun. I watched, I think, every single game the first weekend and pretty much every game, or at least a recap of it since then. And just following, like, the players and the storylines and, oh my God, these guys, you know, the Boston Uprising is a bunch of kind of upstarts, weren't really big names, but they intentionally recruited them so they could meld them together. And that was starting to click in the second half of the season. And here's the Seoul Dynasty that are like just this God tier, but they seem to be falling apart, and what's going on there. And like, it's got all the drama and storyline and excitement that you would find in a traditional sports season. And I freaking went off the deep end with it. So the first stage, that's how long it's been, it's a 5 week stage, and there's four stages in a season.
Oh, Jesus.
And I started watching and haven't gotten to talk about it on the show yet. So it's been too freaking long. But yeah, just so cool.
The one thing that's killed it for me, though, is I can only watch it on Twitch because I get motion sick if it's not in widescreen.
Oh, interesting.
And so I can't watch the reruns on YouTube.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah, that is rough. I mean, I will fess up. I am on record on this show whining about how Overwatch is a terrible game to stream, and they always, you know, do Tracer, who jumps around and you can't follow. But I've kind of, the casting is amazing. The camera work has gotten noticeably better. Just all the infrastructure and supporting media and ethos of it is all top notch, and it's been so fun to just buy into.
It also helps that they've made a little less dorky than a lot of the esports tends to be.
How so? Because it's still pretty dorky.
I don't know. Just like a lot of the, like, I feel like a lot of them I see, like the sets and the costumes and stuff like that, look like something out of Power Rangers.
But yeah, that's another thing. The stage that it's on is beautiful.
Hmm.
Like, kudos to whoever designed it. It's a really quality venue.
Oh, so they broadcast from the same place every time.
They do. So there's right now it's all at a stage in LA, which is funny because you've got like the Dallas Fuel playing the Soul Dynasty in LA. But there's two LA teams, and it totally makes sense to like get the league off the ground. I think the vision is eventually that teams will each have their own venue and people will actually like travel around the states to watch live.
Right.
Closest team to me, and I guess Cole to me and you, is the Philadelphia Fusion.
Mm.
So they're down the road a bit from Cincinnati, but I've been rooting for them. And they were kind of like, mathematically, it was still possible for them to get into the playoffs, but all this stuff had to happen. And they wound up dropping a game that I thought they were going to win. And it, like, again, I get it now. I understand. I've never had a mind for like stats or player names or anything.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, this has made it click. And that's a ton of fun. It's gotten me back into playing Overwatch as well, which I can confirm I am still thoroughly abysmal at.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm enjoying myself.
So other than like, what is it, Houston's team, which is amazing, do you agree, though, that the team names are just most of them are awful?
Yeah, it's OK. Like, they're not the worst. They could be a lot more cringeworthy. I'll say that.
I know, like, I guess I'm partially salty because, like, San Francisco is, like, the Shock or something, which is just
yeah,
dumb.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb. I'm just mad that they made the Philadelphia Fusion and spelled Fusion with an F instead of a PH. Seems, seems like a missed opportunity.
What is there a reason behind that? Most of them are referencing, you know, something the city is known for, stuff like that. What is Philadelphia, though? Like,
bring Asian food there.
I assumed there was something to do with nuclear development in that city.
See, because that was predominantly like, I think Tennessee, New Mexico, and Chicago, I think.
Wait a minute. Are they referring to, I mean, that's right near where Three Mile Island was.
Oh, that could be.
Philadelphia?
Yeah, that's.
I guess
up.
It could be the Philadelphia experiment.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know about that choice. It's also interesting. Again, I'm going to freaking nerd out, so I apologize to everyone. That it is also like the most multinational team.
Okay.
So in terms of like Fusion, like they have the players, the most like most languages spoken on the team, most countries represented, and that's super interesting because it's a South Korea dominated sport. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of South Koreans on teams, but they don't always speak English, and even I would say a lot of times the majority of the team doesn't speak English, so they're communicating and like they're finding ways to play the game and gel
Welcome
together.
Welcome to my team. World.
Yeah, teams. Yeah, you would get it, David. A team centric game. Without with a huge language barrier, so that's
although it seemed
that's...
like it seemed like across the board it's been pretty fairly diverse, right?
Extremely diverse, and yeah, the fusion are the most, but they're by no means the only multinational team. And it's exciting because they just signed stage two at the beginning. The Shanghai Dragons will be starting, or hopefully starting, the first female player in the Overwatch League.
Good.
Which is really cool because that's a league where there's no reason to have a gender gap. I think there's at least one openly gay player, and yeah, just a whole bunch of
yeah, so there are
races and nationalities represented.
There's no reason for them to start with all these lines. It's just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
It's Blizzard, and they've cultivated that in the game, mm-hmm. And it's cool to see them cultivating that in real life. So, man, yeah, maybe I should talk about a video game now.
Yeah, probably.
Overrated.
Because I was traveling so much, I played a lot on my Vita. I started playing Hue, which is a puzzle game where you make objects appear and disappear by changing the background color to match that of the object you want to appear or disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fun. It made my head hurt. And it's kind of gotten to that point where like I spend so much time staring at a puzzle that I'm doing more time staring than playing, and when I'm traveling on my Vita, like I kind of want something a little lower key than that. mm-hmm. but very, very solid as just a concept, very unique from what I've seen before. And then the final game, I keep on wrapping it around to kid stuff. I started playing Knack for PS4.
Okay.
And played that with the kiddos on the couch. And that is like the perfect game to play with your kids.
It's like a 2D platformer kind of thing?
Yeah, 3D platformer. It's surprisingly strategic combat. Like, you cannot just run forward and hammer square. You will mm-hmm. die really quickly. Every enemy has a different pattern or attack that you kind of have to learn when is the right time to go in. And then, of course, combinations of enemies mix that up. I've died. I'm playing on normal difficulty, and I've died a surprising amount. But every time I've died, I've known exactly why it was my fault.
Yeah.
So that is it's not complex by any means. There's one button for attacking and one special move,
mm-hmm.
Or one set of special moves, I guess.
Yeah.
I was going in expecting kind of a kiddie cakewalk, and oh, we'll play it because it's colorful and looks like a Pixar movie, but there's actually a fun game behind it. So
is this like a kind of a natural extension of you and the kids playing the Jak games together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is supplanted Jak 2.
Okay.
As the game of choice by request from Luke versus anything I've chosen.
Right, because Jak 2 got too intense for him.
It did. It got scary. He was ducking behind the covers. Although he calls it Max. He doesn't really understand Knack as a word, so it's okay. Max. I want to play Max. You know what? Sure. Yep. Let's go play.
Language is about communication. Let's just have fun together. Come on.
Yeah. So that's me. I mean, there's a shit ton of other stuff, but I'll save it.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. David, since you also were not here, let's hear what you've been up to.
Sure. So mostly I've just been grinding on Monster Hunter.
Nice.
So
How is it?
It's really good. I don't know. It's really good depending on your tolerance for, you know, Skinner boxes. Because like it's very much is a like kill the things, get the loot game.
Right.
But yeah, no, I'm really enjoying it. I made it through the
It's kind of like a reverse Skinner box because you're using a button to kill an animal instead of an animal pressing a button. I don't know, whatever.
Are you thinking of Pavlov? You're thinking of Pavlov.
Yeah.
Wait.
Whoa, Pavlov was way worse than I thought.
What?
Did he kill animals?
No. Like Pavlov was the one where it's like, oh, we ring the bell, and then we teach them to press the button to get there.
Who was it that gave the kids the rabbit phobia?
I don't know. Stanford Prison.
Could be.
Yep.
So I made it through kind of there's a main story that is kind of the thrust of it, and I made it through it, although it then kind of does the, but then we're going to add in like more just random story that's not really that relevant, but you know, it's going to continue on.
It's more a reason to kill different dinosaur dragons.
Yeah, and literally pretty much the plot is like, oh, all of a sudden there's different dinosaur dragons, like go kill them. Like that is basically the additional quote unquote story.
That's all you need.
But I do enjoy like the final level is really cool because you're basically fighting this boss that's been, you know, the entire game's revolved around, who's basically, if you cross like Godzilla and a volcano,
it's like it is a dinosaur / dragon that is also the size of an island that has crossed the sea. You're part of a group of people who are chasing it, but not so much to try and kill it, but to understand like the effect that it has on ecosystems, which mostly involves hunting down and killing these things for conservation's sake.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think an entire island.
We have concluded this has a negative impact on ecosystems because scientists will follow it and kill all animals near it.
It turns out the real monster was the Monster Hunter.
So I'm actually wondering if it's kind of going to do this because all of the weapons that are designed for like killing basically these dragons are all very like all of the ones that basically have the element that they're weak to are all explicitly evil.
Huh.
So it's like, I don't know. Apparently our characters aren't very self-aware. But anyways, like with that, it being the size of an island, it's really cool because you're basically like rock climbing up it. And there's, segments where like it'll switch between like walking on all fours and, you know, walking Godzilla style. And so like all of a sudden everything that was a horizontal surface is now a vertical surface and vice versa.
Hmm.
So there's, yeah, it's just kind of a cool fight. Other than that, I don't know, a lot, the weapons still, continue to be, a lot of fun. I've been surprised. Actually, the ranged weapons are really well done. They in particular, the bow all revolves around basically doing like dodge shots, so like dodging and then immediately firing.
Uh-huh.
And so it really trades on like being able to track your target as you're moving.
Uh-huh.
Although the one I've been going through for is called a switch axe, which is basically like the
it's like a Bloodborne trick weapon.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the, was it the Saul from Bloodborne?
Yeah. It has a sword form where it builds up energy by attacking, and then you change it to the axe form to unleash it.
So it's actually the other way.
Oh,
around.
Shit. Okay. Whoops.
Because it's Monster Hunter and nothing can be straightforward, what you described was the charge axe. whereas the switch axe, you build up in axe form and then discharge it in sword form.
Okay.
But it's very much, a lot of the stuff is just designed to kind of be arbitrarily anime cool. So like with this, one of your special abilities is you basically thrust forward, charge up energy, and then do like a blast from the end of your sword that causes an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And if your enemy is already like stunned or dazed, you'll actually like climb up on them and like go use the climbing mechanics with your like ultimate attack.
Hmm.
So it's just, kind of, the rule of cool.
Yeah. What weapon other than that did you mostly find yourself using? Because like that is not one of the ones they encourage new players to use.
Yeah. So kind of, I've used the, dual swords a lot, and that's basically the gist, straight up. Yeah. Like aggressive play style. And then I've also really liked the sword and shield, which, that one's real interesting because, it can be very defensive, but at the same time, it's actually probably the second most mobile and fastest. So it's very well-rounded.
So sword and shield, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I've ended up using.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Have you played around with like the insect glaive or any of the real weird ones yet?
That caught my eye because I tend to like spear type weapons in games. Sure. I'm curious about it. So, I mean, this is a bit of a spoiler. Might as well talk about it here. I've been playing a little bit of this as well, but I'm super early on, mostly because I've been trying to get ahead on WoW stuff. Like I said, it cleared out Breath of the Wild. For me, like, it has been a real uphill battle trying to figure out what mechanics matter.
Sure, in terms of, like...
Oh, just, there's a bunch of numbers, and there's just a whole bunch of, things that it asks you to keep track of, and loot, and things like that. So, I just, outside of figuring out the moment-to-moment, like... Here's how you dodge, and here are the bonuses you get for like blocking at the right times and things like that. Like all of the action parts of the action RPG, I can wrap my head around. But I'm a little bit overwhelmed still by just the overall stattiness of it. Like, yeah, I have no idea.
Very explicitly does a horrible job of explaining that.
Right, right. And that's a shame, because this is the entry that is like, oh, this is the they're trying to bring new people in. I mean, if I dedicate enough attention to it, I have all faith that I will, you know, figure it out. Like, I'm not dumb, but it's making me feel dumb as I try and get acclimated to it. Basically, like, I just want to know what the levers are that I'm trying to pull. I need to know what the intended result is beyond don't die. So I know what the inputs are, what levers I can pull to make that happen. And I don't feel like I'm quite there yet. It feels good and it looks good. And you know, that's about the level that I'm appreciating it at right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the other thing is it kind of has a little bit of the Borderlands type thing, in that what the stats are super important, but at the same time, like, the way a weapon feels is vital. So
yeah,
there's definitely been fights where, like, with my preferred weapons, I just get destroyed. I'll switch to, like, some other thing, and that just, like, works with the way one of the enemies moves.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm totally down for that kind of, oh, I just need to adapt to this. But, like, I don't know if I'm at the point where I understand, like, oh, you want to make this particular kind of trap because it does this element or has this particular, like, effect on an invisible stat that you don't quite understand. Right.
Stuff. Well, and one of the things that that I do feel like I really like the research mechanic of, like, as you track the monsters more, you learn their weaknesses and stuff like that. But the problem with that is that means that, like, I'm inherently going to have at least one fight where, like, they don't even, for a lot of the missions, even tell you what you're going up against. So it might be like, oh, I'm going to go against a lava monster with my fire sword. Like, I would have done that. So one of the things that's actually ended up being probably my favorite monster in the game is there's kind of a raptor monster that ends up being the troll dinosaur. So it's programmed to not be a predator, so it won't actually go out and, you know, try to actually kill anything, but it's also powerful enough that, like, when it comes across one of the other predators that it views as a threat, it'll actually fight back until it can escape. And its special ability is the ability to, like, flashbang and stun everyone in front of it. So the end result is it will just, like, come waltzing through the area where you're, like, having some epic fight, stun both you and your enemy, and then, like, run away. And then that's, like, all you'll see of it.
So I like that very much. I have not run into that, but I definitely have been hunting a particular set of monsters, like, as, you know, the quest will be call this population or whatever, and then, like, just something will come running in trying to compete with me for that kill. Like,
they call that the jet ski class of monster. They jet ski off.
Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the cool things, like, you know, the, like, these are kind of ecosystems, and these monsters interact with each other, and by monsters I mean dinosaur dragons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I know there's some sort of Jeff Goldblum chaos theory joke in here somewhere, but yeah. It's too late for that.
Nice. Yeah. Anything else besides Monster Hunter World?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Understood. Ben, how about you?
This is going to be like a repeat of last week. I've done, like, the same two things. I've continued streaming The Witness, and I think we're maybe, like, one episode away from 100%ing the game. Mm. So that's been continued to be fun. It's also a lot of fun to go over a game with, like, a stream, because, like, you'll kind of get turned on to certain things that you didn't notice, but other people in the chat might notice. Like, an example of some of the sound effects in the game. Like, I didn't know that in the town, if you go up by the bell, there's this weird, like, sound effect that plays of, like, kind of like this ambient bell music. yeah, I don't know. So that's been a lot of fun. And then the main game that I've been playing is Subnautica still. I believe last week I talked about searching for ingredients for a thing. I've gotten the thing. The thing allowed me to go deeper in the water, and then I saw a scary monster and immediately checked out of that save file. I went back to the surface. But yeah, it still continues to be kind of scary at parts, but it's still fun. Yeah, I don't know. Still a really pretty game. I like that game a lot. So
nice.
Continue to recommend that game, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think right now I'm just trying to look for kind of some miscellaneous upgrades for some of my other ships. And then I'll try and do more stuff with that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you have multiple ships in this?
Possibly. Yeah. Who knows?
All the world's a stage.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, and the oceans too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty great. There's like a nice like Sims element to the game where you kind of like build your own area, and it definitely feels like a home after a while. But it's, I mean, you know, it's like they don't tell you how to build your base. You know, it's completely up to you. So that's really fun. Yeah.
Very cool.
So maybe I missed this from previous conversations, but like, what is the end game? What's the win condition of that game?
I assume it's like Factorio, where eventually you build a rocket ship and fly off the planet. But I don't know. I don't want to say too much because, like, this, I mean, I don't want to spoil much of the story elements because, like, there, you know, there's not a huge like narrative in the game, but like whenever there are narrative points, they do a good job of like recontextualizing like your situation. So like every narrative point's kind of like a twist, you know. So I don't really want to talk about that because I don't want to give those away because it's really fun to discover that in the game. But yeah, when there is story, it is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I might stream some of that maybe. I tried doing that a couple weeks ago, but I think it was a little bit laggy for my stream, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's a very tempting game still. I need to find a reason to reward myself with it.
If you need a hex crank entry, there are parts that are very scary.
Yeah.
So in terms of just if you're afraid of when you're in the ocean, it's like that. So.
That is basically everything that I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
Oh, there are spiders too.
Are there?
Yeah, there are spiders in the game. Yeah,
that is unfortunate.
Oh,
very headcrab esque. But yeah,
is that everything, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been really busy, really preoccupied finishing up Breath of the Wild for Watch Out for Fireballs. Mm-hmm. We can, you know, I'll save that the discussion of that for that particular show. I don't think I have a very controversial or out of the norm opinions about that. It's a good game. Like, it deserves its praise. Been doing a little bit of time in Monster Hunter World, but not nearly enough to feel like I have much more to say than what I did when David was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the stuff I've been streaming, honestly. So did Soma over the past weekend. I played that back around the time it came out, and I wasn't really impressed with it just because it is a scary game and there's a lot of really upsetting stuff to it. Like, it also has that Subnautica thing of, man, being undersea is really scary. Like, even just the natural things. And then when you introduce, you know, gray goo, techno tumor, you know, robofish into the equation, it also, you know, it's a little fucked up.
Apparently not about what I thought it was about.
Yeah. kind of the thing that everybody praises it for, which is kind of its the existential questions that it raises, I recognize, you know, like, it should be lauded for that. Like, it's worth taking that stuff on, I think. I think that it does it very inelegantly and through a character that kind of sells it past the close because they keep on re-explaining it over and over again. However, playing it with an audience and going through it again, understanding what the overall arc would be, there's a tremendous amount of detail in there that, you know, that particular set of circumstances and playing it a second time with people around helped me appreciate it more. So I'm not as like, I was never down on it. I always thought it was worth playing if you like frictional stuff. Like, this is the team that did Amnesia: The Dark Descent. But I am a little bit less of a, you know, just a rain cloud about it, I guess.
To what degree, you know, my understanding is like Penumbra and Amnesia were and stuff like that were basically the same game. Is this one more different? That's a lot more negative than what I mean, but you know what I mean, though.
I mean, it's still in the same mode. Like, there's no combat. You know, you are either stealthing or running away from enemies that will kill you in one or two hits.
Sure. Is it still like, you know, hiding in closets and or whatever the closet analog is, sort of thing?
Little bit less of that. Like, there's not much like, oh, I'm under a bed now or I'm in a closet. I think they recognize that standing inside of a closet doesn't make for a very compelling play experience. This is more about like understanding the way a particular monster works, like what kind of senses it's working with or what kind of abilities it has, and managing your distance and your motion in order to you know, not attract its ire or its attention. So they made that part of it a little bit more sophisticated, right? Another thing they made more sophisticated is like, even though your main character is just incredibly dense and not that great, it is built around some really great banter and dialogue with a scientist who is in the underwater research area. Like Catherine, the character that you're, you know, who's helping you around, ends up being really compelling and interesting. And I didn't appreciate how much effort went into making that relationship, you know, work on the screen the first time I played. And, you know, again, with perspective, understanding her role in the story, big thumbs up for that.
Cool.
Yeah. So Soma's cool. Breath of Fire 3 continues being really cool. That's been a lot of fun to stream. People are, you know, some very knowledgeable people, or people who are knowledgeable about that game, are coming out of the woodwork, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Sharing tips and, you know, saying like, oh gosh, I love this track, or this character's good, or, you know, that sprite. Like, it is a fun little game that I don't know if I have anything additional to say about it just yet.
Keep on grinding.
Yeah. Still trying to find a time for that to go up. I basically streamed every day last week. Probably going to try doing it, you know, maybe Tuesdays and then one other day. So we'll figure it out. Yeah,
but that's, let me know when you start playing Subnautica.
Oh yeah, I am very curious about it. Like I said, yeah, cool. So that's everything. Any lingering thoughts about that stuff that I brought up?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Do you all want to button it up?
Oh! I know this one. I know this one. I remember it had something.
Yes. A yes would be the answer.
Bullhorns, buttons. There it is.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this level 230, the return of Dennis. We appreciate it. If you would like to help out the show, you can go to patreon.com/duckvtv. Check out the pledging tiers there. Our Facebook page is on and bumping. That's where we do all of our, you know, listener interaction stuff. That's, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And the only way the show grows is if you tell friends about it. So if you, want to help spread the word, that is, something we are very grateful for. Is there anything that I'm forgetting?
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this will be coming out on early release on Valentine's Day. So everybody who's listening to this early, happy Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And also happy Valentine's Day to people who decided, you know, Wednesday is a weird day to like do a thing. Let's just save it for the weekend. That's fine too. Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day to the person who forgot it was Valentine's Day is now like, oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah. see, that's the thing. Luck. That's the thing though. Them chocolates get real cheap on the 15th.
Oh, that's, so we didn't talk about it. I'm doing another Whole 30 right now, so missing on those primo chocolate snipes there.
Oh, so yeah. So this was strategy on your part, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Just do one of those chocolate and sea salt RX bars. I think you're fine.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you, everybody. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia at dfuria on Twitter, and you can watch my streams at greenlaser73.
I've been David Meinsmith, and you cannot watch my streams because I haven't started streaming yet.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
Cool. And stick around for some titles.
Really need to start streaming, although I feel like with the games I play, no one's going to watch like 5 hours of me collecting herbs.
Test me.
Watch Monster Hunter World. It's hot right now.
Yeah, it's very hot right now. Yeah.
It's so hot right now.
Who has a title?
Let's see here. I had two. I had Timmy's Stories from early on.
Okay. Sorry, it took me a second.
Yeah, I wrote it T-I-M-M-Y.
Okay, yeah.
Get it when they listen. And then reincarnated as a Pokemon trainer.
Okay.
And that's what I got.
Okay. Ben, you got any?
I just have something I'd be very happy to be upset about because I have the same pad that I wrote on last week. Well, I do not have one.
Yeah, I didn't write any down either. So, David, save us.
I did not write anything down.
How's Timmy's story sound?
Timmy's story sounds like the way to go.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go to bed because I am a sleepy, sleepy boy. All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good night, guys.
Cool. Take care. Yes. It's been good having you back, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, guys.
Later, everybody. Bye.
Peace.